It's done.
Connor McDavid! It's not real!
The goal of the year?
Panarin!
Part of the past. The celebrations? Forgotten. The history?
Vegas Golden Knights!
History. We're back to a blank slate. Clean ice. All that matters now is what happens next. The Stanley Cup Playoffs.
Eastern Conference Final begins Wednesday.
I feel like a locomotive sipping, drinking Arizona. Mixtape just around the corner. Did a lot in California. Can't wait to drop this, don't you? Yeah, they gon' have fun with that. Smash like song, and my song's gon' break through like a run.
Hello and welcome back to the podcast. It is always, sometimes, sorta, kinda up to speed with Formula One. It is Thursday, October 18th, 2023. My name is Mark Daly, flying solo here in the Scuderia F1 studios. Mr. Mark Hamilton is off tonight, and we continue this streak where you get one Mark, but not both Marks. But Hammy will be back on Sunday night. We'll sit down together to finally do our first show together in, what, almost a month now? And I'm kind of joking off the top of the show here that we're sometimes up to speed with Formula One because I've been away for a couple of weeks for work on a course. And even though I wasn't off the grid, they were very, very long days and the nights were long, kind of doing coursework and things like that. So I've only been really kind of trying to catch up with what had happened in Formula One over the past couple of days since I came back. I knew what happened in Qatar last weekend, but I didn't get a chance to sit down and actually watch the race until the other night. And that is the first time that I've missed a Grand Prix on the day of, literally since I don't know when. It's been a very, very, very long time, but I'm glad to be back. And, you know, big shout out to Hammy for all the fantastic work that he's done keeping this thing going while I've been away. And I certainly look forward to him coming back on the weekend and doing what we do together as we inch ever closer to episode 500. Isn't that crazy? I was thinking about it when I was looking at the catalog a little bit earlier this week, and I noticed that, what are we, like 480 something now? I'll figure it out in post, all good. Anyways, I realized that the big 500th episode is coming up really, really fast. And I was thinking that when Mark and I started collaborating, working together on this podcast way back in, I guess it would have been the end of 2020. So we've been, almost 3 years to the day now, which is really kind of a bit of a wake up call. I didn't realize it'd been that long until the words came out of my mouth. But I think at the time there was something like about 100. I did 150, 80, something like that episodes by myself or with another host I used to do the show with. But since then, you know, Mark and I have probably done over 300 episodes together. But we're putting out shows at least twice a week, and well, that adds up quickly. Anyways, before we jump into the news for this week, just want to give a shout out to the usuals, the people that help keep the lights on here. Just a quick shout out to Magnus and the crew over the raceweekendmagazine.com. And you can enter in our promo code at checkout to save 10% on a subscription. And that is the Race Weekend, RACEWKND.com. Also, big shout out and big thanks to racingexclusives.com for one of a kind unique Formula One merch with a COA, Certificate of Authenticity. Head on over to racingexclusive.com to find Formula One mementos, souvenirs, and other things that you won't find anywhere else. And they are the ones that have provided us with this gorgeous half-scale autographed Max Verstappen helmet that we will be giving away. Well, just in a matter of weeks now, because we're at the end of the season is rapidly approaching, and that will go to the winner of our fantasy league. And speaking of which, this is usually Mark's thing, but since Hammy is away today, I am going to do the fantasy update. So in first place, we have Michael Cronier 16 with 5,272 points. Matt Noob Team 3 in second with 5,233 points. Axis Simon third with 5,230. And the you have Vince Dest 2 with 5,211 points, and then Matt Noob Team 2 in 5th place with 5,196 points. So Matt Noob, 2 teams in the top 5. So going on down the rest of the top 10, we have Relampago Marquinhos with 5,190, Bengals Bubs, who has been in the top 10 for ages and ages and ages. Bengals Bubs has 5,188. Zanetta Team 3, Yellow Racing. And then also last place is not in last place, but in 10th place. And they're rounding out our top 10 in fantasy with 5,168 points. So there you go. And then just heading on over to the championship update, what with Max winning the sprint race and the Grand Prix last weekend, the championships are now wrapped up, well, obviously for both the drivers and the constructors championship, but let's just go over that real quickly nonetheless. So Max, first place in the championship, is crowned the world champion, third season running. Max, 433 points. Sergio Perez is teammate at Red Bull, 224. You have Lewis Hamilton from Mercedes, 194 points. Fernando Alonso, 183 points. Carlos Sainz rounds out the top five, and the Ferrari driver has 153. Going on down the rest of the top 10 in the Drivers' Championship, you have Charles Leclerc, Lando Norris, George Russell, Oscar Piastri, and Lance Stroll rounding out the top 10. And over on the constructor side, which was wrapped up by Red Bull a couple of weeks ago now, they have 657 points. Mercedes is second with 326. Ferrari is third with 298. Aston Martin is fourth with 230 points, and McLaren now only 11 points behind Aston Martin in the constructors with 219 points. And what a magnificent turnaround that we've seen from McLaren this season. Absolutely astonishing, though, the way that they've turned this around and where they were, where they've come from, and to where they are now, and to be, well, obviously considered also-rans at the beginning of the year, to a very, very good team. And they've been one of the bright spots. You know, obviously Aston Martin started off the season being that that ray of light that may be able to challenge Red Bull. And they've faded as the season has progressed and gone on. And once they started to fade away, it seemed like McLaren started to come on. And they've certainly done some wonderful things. So looking forward to watching what they do for the remainder of the season. So just another reminder, just 4 weeks until the inaugural Las Vegas Grand Prix, and that means that is going to be our Las Vegas Grand Prix watch party. So this is going to be hosted by myself and Mr. Mark Hamilton at his lovely palatial abode here in Coquitlam, BC, which is a suburb of Vancouver. If you want to get in on that, send us an email, scooteryf1pod@gmail.com, or slide into our DMs on Twitter or X or whatever the heck they're calling it right now. And let us know. And of course, you know, it's free to attend, but we would appreciate anyone that shows up to make a donation to the Canadian Mental Health Association. So another interesting little tidbit here. This weekend is Charles Leclerc's 100th race for Ferrari. He's been with the team since 2019. That is absolutely astonishing that he's racked up that many starts, that many races for Ferrari. And what's that old meme, the one with Ron Burgundy? And boy, that escalated quickly, but good for Charles, who incidentally is also celebrating his 26th birthday. So a big weekend, or a big weekend for the Monegasque Charles Leclerc. And interesting news here coming out of the McLaren camp today, that Bianca Bustamante is joining the McLaren F1 driver development program. So that's pretty cool. And we'll be keeping an eye and seeing what Bianca is going to do. And certainly says she's done very well in the F1 Driver Academy, and looking forward to see what she can do with you know, the support of an actual Formula One team. Very, very cool. And also, just to round out some of these little notable tidbits from the news this week, it's Kimi Raikkonen, the Iceman himself, is celebrating his 44th birthday. And again, I think to myself, where did time go? Anyways, going to jump into the news here now, and bearing in mind that the world is a pretty scary, nasty place at the moment, and don't want to you know, brush over that fact, you know, especially when there are so many horrible things going on, and almost anywhere you can think of that we're not glossing over that fact. Myself and Mark, we talk about these things all the time, but I think we all need a little bit of a break from all that, the heavy news that seems to be surrounding us 24/7. And certainly we'd like I say, I don't want to downplay or ignore any of that, but let's just, for our own mental health and all the stress and anxiety that we're all feeling for, you know, and from many different directions, that that Formula One is here, and it's a chance just to, you know, blow off a little bit of steam and enjoy something else when everything else seems very, very dark at the moment. Anyways, so some good news here. First of all, going into the first piece of the news for the week. So Keanu Reeves' Formula One documentary is going to get a release date, or it does have a release date, and it's called, it is Braun, The Impossible Formula One Story, and it's a four-part series, and this tells the wonderful, amazing story of Braun GP's season back in 2019, and that's going to be streaming on Disney Plus and in the UK, and then in Hulu in the US. So this is very, very cool. It's going to be premiering globally on November 15th, so just under a month away. So Keanu is joined by a lot of the key players from that as he narrates an account of Braun and Jenson Button's 2009 title-winning season. Interviews include Jenson Button and also then his teammate Rubens Barrichello, Braun GP CEO Nick Fry. It also features Ross Braun, the owner and team principal of the team at the time, which eventually became Mercedes, Christian Horner, and the list goes on. So this is very, very cool, and really looking forward to watching that drop in just a couple of weeks from now. So let's move on over to Red Bull. Of course, they always seem to take up a lot of real estate on this news. So there seems to be some quarrels and then some rest inside the team, and it's always kind of interesting when you hear things like this, stories like that, makes you wonder how long can they keep this all together. But Christian Horner himself has basically dismissed all these rumors and the speculation that he is trying to push Helmut Marko out of Red Bull, and that really downplay the fact, or not the fact I should say, but speculation that there's an internal power struggle at Red Bull. So this is a story that was kind of bubbling up in the Brazilian media by former Formula One driver Luciano Berti, that someone was going to be held at the U.S. Grand Prix this week where Helmut Marko's future would be discussed. So I don't know, very interesting to hear, but I don't know. I mean, Helmut Marko in, you know, this year and in recent times seems to make the news for the wrong reason. So could that be part of a potential power struggle? Is it something else? But everybody seems to be keeping mum on the fact. But it's interesting to note that Helmut Marko is not actually a direct employee of Red Bull Racing, and therefore Christian Horner has no control over Red Bull. Or his advisor, who actually reports to Oliver Mintzlaff following the death of Marco's friend and the founder of Red Bull, Dietrich Mateschitz, about this time last year. So Christian Horner, that is, and Helmut Marko, they have a long, long relationship going back to Horner's career himself as a race driver, and when he was taking his first step into managing a Formula One team. So we'll see. I never really understand when these things go, but anyways, Christian Horner explained to the Daily Mail what's going on, and he said, quote, "We've always enjoyed a very strong and open relationship, and of course there are things that we disagree on now and again, but I think that's healthy. We speak very regularly about all aspects. For Helmut, it's slightly different to how I used to be since the passing of his friend and colleague Dietrich Mateschitz, but he is still a very valuable role that he plays within the team, and there's absolutely no intent or desire for me or anyone within the team, pardon me, to see that change. For as long as he wants to continue, he's still a very sprightly 80-year-old. I don't see any change in the way that we work. Roles evolve, and the business has evolved so much since we first came into the sport. Operationally, I run this on a day-to-day basis, and for any significant decisions, of course, we confer, whether it be drivers or strategic calls. It's a partnership that has worked for many, many years. Everybody has their role and a function to play, end quote. So read into that what you will. I mean, he kind of downplays it a little bit, but I would say Christian is kind of playing the gray area there a little bit, but make that what you will, and whether or not there's any discontent or maybe not, we will have to wait and see. So this is an interesting thing here where that Mark pulled off, the other Mark that is, Hammy pulled off of Reddit, one of his favorite places to go and dig for little nuggets. And it's interesting. There's an ORF Digital interview about the rumors that have been going around on his future, the power struggle between him speculatively and Christian Horner, and some of the rumors on Sergio Perez and Yuki Tsunoda. Anyways, I'll just read the screenshot that Mark has here. So Helmut Marko, this is obviously sounds like an audio interview. So there's Austria is the one part. He says, Mr. Marko, how are you? Helmut Marko says, good, contrary to many assumptions, I have to disappoint as they say, doomsayers. And then it goes on, how do you explain that the many rumors about your future that are currently circulating online? Helmut responds, no idea. So kind of cheeky the way that he says it, but kind of shoots it down right away. Anyways, it goes on. The next question says, apparently there's a summit this week that will discuss your future. When and where should it take place? To which Marko replies, there's no summit this week. I have a contract until the end of next year. When and how I stop, when it's over, I decide, and not, for example, Mr. Horner. Next question. And what is the truth about the alleged power struggle between you and Red Bull team boss Christian Horner? To which Marko replies, due to the new constellation, everything is different. Certain people now are trying to redefine their powers. Next question. Another point of contention is allegedly Yuki Tsunoda. He was to be replaced at AlphaTauri. You were supposedly against it because it could disrupt good relations with their Japanese engine supplier Honda. Is that correct? Which Marko replies, quote, this is all just speculation, just like the one about Perez. There's no ultimatum for Perez. I think we're winning too much. Incredible things are being brought into the world. Max Verstappen's performance should be appreciated much, much more. It's extraordinary. And the next and final question that Mark picked here asks, Max is also demonstratively supports you in his interviews, to which Marko replies, on the one hand, that is very reassuring. There is still something like loyalty and appreciation. Since our first conversation when Max was 15, there's been a special connection between us. Now I'm looking forward to Austin, where we can hopefully celebrate his 50th Grand Prix victory on Sunday, end quote. So there you go. Divulging too much information. I think it was kind of interesting, kind of dodged that little bit, that one about Yuki Tsunoda, completely flipped it around and turned it into a little conversation or an answer about Sergio Perez and Max Verstappen. So I don't know. We will wait and see. I think that, obviously Marko thinks that he will be able to walk away on his own terms when he wants to. He obviously was pretty clear in stating that he has a contract at Red Bull until the end of next year. But, perhaps if there is a power struggle there, perhaps he doesn't even know that the Sword of Damocles is hanging above his head and maybe, pushed out without even knowing. But again, this is Formula One. It's really fun to speculate about. And we can talk about this for hours and hours and hours, the reasons for and the reasons against. And it is what it is at this point in its speculation. So we'll have to wait and see what happens and if anything else bubbles up to the top. So another thing about, it's been a very, very long day, I must admit, and what with my trip last week, I'm struggling a little bit. It's not super late when Mark and I, as usually sit down with Mark to record the podcast, but this week has been a bit of a grind, so pardon me if I stumble a little bit in doing the show this week. Anyways, the final story here about Helmut Marko before I head into a break, he's been honored in Graz in Austria for the work that he's done in Murtal and Graz region, as well as in Formula One. He's been awarded the Gerhard Hirschman Prize for Critical Thinking. And so he's been honored in Graz, which is his hometown. He was honored by the jury who awards the Hirschman Prize for, quote, his decades of work, also behind the scenes with regard to the sporting, but also the economic development of Styria, end quote. So good for him. All right. Well, just looking at the clock here, I think this is a good place to take a real, real quick break, come back on the flip side and dive into the news itself. It looks like obviously some of the teams are talking and voicing some of their displeasure at the fact that it sounds like Andretti is a lock to join Formula One now that they've had their bid approved by the FIA, and it sounds like the established network is circling the wagons a little bit and saying, well, I guess more or less we would expect them to say. Anyways, we'll talk about that and a whole lot more in just a moment, so please hang in there. Don't go away. I will be back in just one moment. All right, welcome back to the podcast. Once again, Mark Daly here, flying solo on a Thursday night. Mark Hamilton is away for a couple of days after I was away for many days, and it's been many days and many weeks since we sat down and did a podcast together, but we will be reunited very, very soon. The band will be coming back together before you know it. You know, it's like Simon without Garfunkel, Hall without Oates, whatever you want to call it. It's just me tonight, but I'm endeavoring to do my very, very best. I don't know where the Hall and Oates one came from, but there it is, a nice 80s reference, if you like. Okay, the next story on the agenda here is comes from motorsport.com, and this is an article from Jonathan Noble entitled COVID Crisis, a Warning Over 11th F1 Team Approval, says Steiner. And the byline reads as follows: Haas-Boss Günther Steiner thinks the crisis Formula One faced during the COVID-19 pandemics shows why it should not risk destabilizing current teams by adding an 11th team. So it goes on to say that obviously that Andretti Motorsport is hoping to agree to a commercial deal with FOM to enter Formula One from 2025 at the very earliest, after they were given the green light to join Formula One a couple of weeks ago by the FIA. There is absolutely no guarantee that Formula One management will actually approve the Andretti's bid, and they have to, because they're going to be actually asking the questions: if we let this team in, are they actually going to be able to get a benefit it by adding them to the grid? So a lot of the teams already there have come out and spoken against it. They are not really in favor of Andretti because they feel that the commercial impact could really affect them by having to basically get smaller pieces of the pie. And by the pie, I mean the prize money that all the teams share, and that would be reduced because, well, there's going to be 11 teams potentially rather than 10. Anyway, the Steiner has to say, quote, in the current situation, we are stable, but it's not like we are making hundreds of millions of profits. We are still trying to get our budgets together to work on the budget cap and all that stuff. I would like to go back to 2020 when I remember sitting in these video meetings when the pandemic hit and four teams were questioning, are we going to be here next year or not? We were all struggling, trying to keep alive, and a lot of people and a lot of team owners put their money in to stay alive and to make Formula One what it is now. I think there is value to that as well. I think most of the teams are asking, why would we dilute what we've got just to get somebody else when Formula One is booming? Because who knows what in 3 or 4 years what will happen? And I go back, it's only in 2020 when we were struggling to stay alive as Formula Ones, because if four teams fall out, then there are only six left. And why would you make it weaker now? If something comes up again, we need to be strong as we can be. And the 10 teams which are here, which got through the tough, hard times, end quote. So Günther Steiner is not really backing down. He's been, he's had a pretty long-term stance and a opinion that that Andretti's entry into Formula One should only get approved if there's what he calls tangible evidence, and I'm doing the inverted air commas here, tangible evidence that Andretti's arrival into Formula One will bring benefit to the entire grid. And he goes on to say, quote, there could be, but there could, should, would, but if they can show they can bring something which we accept, then that's fine. FOM has to see it, not me. They've got the big picture. It's not only about Haas that doesn't want to get them. In general, Formula One is not convinced that there is a need for an 11th team. Don't go down. It's Andretti. Whoever it is, Formula One at the moment is not convinced that 11th team is bringing added value. Keep it simple. End quote. And as I'm sitting here, I can literally hear Hammy screaming in my mind. If he was here, if he was on the other side of the studio here, he would be yelling, but Gunther, what value are you bringing to Formula One? What value is Haas bringing to Formula One? You're not bringing any value to Formula One since you joined in 2016. I know that's what Mark would say right now. And I don't disagree with that point at all. So it seems a little bit kind of strange that Gunther would say. I do agree, however, that that the teams did pull together. I know that there was money invested during the pandemic. I know that they did a lot of work to make sure that they kept a stable environment, to keep the sport safe, to keep all the teams afloat and all those things. I have tremendous amount of respect for that, but I'm hoping now that that we're living in this post-COVID world, this pandemic recovery, whatever you want to call it, that things are getting back together. And obviously, I would hope, when I say obviously, that that the FIA has done their due diligence, that they've really looked into this Andretti bid, that the partnership that they have with GM, with Cadillac, is more than just window dressing, that there's something tangible there, that that they would bring something other than name recognition. And obviously, Andretti has been very, very successful in other motor series that they've raced in, and but Formula One's the big one. Right, it's not Indy, it's not any of the other series where they've raced in the past, and no disrespect to any of those motoring series, but I mean Formula One. I think that everyone here that listens to this program on a regular basis would agree that Formula One is the big one. It is the marquee, the elite class of motor racing on the planet. And if you're somebody in the position like Michael and Mario Andretti, you have this amazing motorsport conglomerate behind you. We've been successful everywhere. And they both were obviously successful as drivers, both Michael and Mario Andretti, that this would be the ultimate challenge to do. So you're not going to take that lightly. I mean, I know that maybe you could say that that Michael's attempts to garner support within the paddock were maybe a little brusque, maybe a little bit forward, and you could see why he would ruffle some feathers within the establishment, if you want to call them that, or the established Formula One teams. But it does seem a little bit funny that that the team that has arguably not brought anything positive, or not too many positive things. I know that Gunther Steiner, as a personality himself, has become a bit of a rock star, a bit of a cult figure in Formula One, but the Haas themselves, I mean, they're not really a very exciting team to watch, and that's what it is. I mean, Kevin Magnussen has some of his has moments from time to time, but I don't know. I'm not completely for or against what Gunther Steiner is saying, but I do find it a little bit interesting, the comments that he has. Anyways, this is also very similar. The story's been going around. I mean, I look at some of the different stories here. There's another one written by Ben Anderson over at therace.com, basically going over the same things that that I've just been talking about. Andretti joining the grid. Anyways, he had said to therace.com, that is Gunther Steiner, that is, it says, quote, the economic station we are stable. We are not making hundreds of millions of profits, which we saw again in the previous article. So it's really just kind of getting rehashed. So Who knows? We'll wait and see. But I don't know. What do you guys think? I'd love to hear it. Send us a tweet at ScooterF1Pod. Do you think that that Andretti will make it into the grid potentially as early as 2025 or sometime thereafter? Or is it going to get through the approval phase at the FIA only to be shot down by FOM and they won't be able to reach a commercial agreement? I don't know. I would like to say that that it will get through, but I'm not entirely convinced. I think that that Formula One is a bit of a closed club at the moment, and perhaps Andretti can do a one heck of a sales job to convince them that that they're going to be the people that they want to bring on board to be that, or to join the club as it were, and really bring something special to Formula One. But I don't know. I could really see this going either way, as much as I could say or see it as you know, Formula One or FOM, Formula One management, and Andretti getting down together and sitting down together and working out a deal. I also see it going the other way. So I will believe the news when I see it and not just sit here and say, yeah, it's a lock, because I think it's anything but. But it's very similar, because not Günther Steiner, but Fred Vasseur, the team principal over at Ferrari, he's basically said the same thing. So I'll just read the article here, and this is this comes from, pardon me, from motorsportweek.com by Taylor Powling, and the quote is here from Fred Vasseur. He says, quote, "It's not a secret that I'm not a big fan, that when we opened the door to an 11th team in the Concorde agreement last time, it was for a good reason. That at this stage Honda said already that they would leave F1 and Renault was on edge. I mean, we only had Mercedes and Ferrari confirmed for the future. And we opened the door to 11th team in case they could bring something substantial to the Formula One. And I think at this stage, that was mainly the engine." As James said before, and that's James Vowles, that Fred Vasseur is referring to. As James said before, all the teams on the grid, they made a big effort. We have to keep in mind that 3 or 4 years ago, we had almost as half the grid quite close to bankruptcy. We have to avoid to being arrogant at Formula One. That is the life cycle, and we don't know what could happen before 2030. And I think that we would put F1 in a tough situation for this. And then he goes on to say, except that if the new entrant is bringing massive added value to Formula One, and I didn't have access to the CEO of Andretti, but I think it's the first question: what is the added value for F1? We've already got a 10th team who's American with Haas. We have an American driver on the grid, and the question for me is around this: what could be the value? End quote. So I don't know. Is he suggest? I think he's more than suggesting that he thinks that the only value that that Andretti brings is that that they're an American team. Whereas, well, we don't need another American team because we've already got one with Haas. We don't need them to bring American drivers because we already have an American driver in Logan Sargeant. But I don't think that Andretti necessarily is joining Formula One because they're an American team and they want to, you know, get American drivers on the track, which would be great. Don't get me wrong, but I think that that their intentions, that they want to be there because they think that they can do the job and that they can win in Formula One. I think it's as simple as that. I think that, you know, for the American fans, it's just for them, it's a bonus that they are a household name. The Andretti's are legends. They are a household name in North America. Everybody knows the name Andretti. If you know even a little bit about motor racing, a lot of people know the name Mario Andretti, maybe a little bit to a lesser extent. His son Michael is a race driver, but again, the Andretti name very, very well known. Okay, so we're going to move on to the next story here. We'll talk about this one for a little bit before we go into the next break. And it seems funny, some of the I as soon as I read the headline here from racefans.net, which says Steiner expects to have future debate over whether Red Bull should have two F1 teams. And I can see Mark Hamilton's animated response to this. I can see the shaking of fists and the pulling of hair and the excited voice. And, you know, this is something that we've talked about on the podcast for probably as long as Mark and I have been doing the show together. And it just seems like such a funny situation, right? I mean, why does Red Bull have two teams with Red Bull Racing and Scuderia AlphaTauri, or, well, it used to be Toro Rosso. I guess they're not Scuderia AlphaTauri, just AlphaTauri now. But it's basically been that feeder team, you know, that development team where they park drivers to mature, which is a bit funny at the moment because you have Yuki Tsunoda, who is, third year now in Formula One, I guess. That's another situation that you could say, boy, that escalated quickly. And then Danny Ricciardo, who rejoined the Red Bull family after the end of last year, was a reserve driver, then got promoted back to a race seat halfway through the season after Nick de Vries was let go just before the Dutch, before the Dutch Grand Prix. When was it now? Back in the summer, either before Hungary or it's got come and gone so quickly, and I'm completely all out of sync. Anyways, the point is not completely a driver development team, but optically it just looks very, very strange to see it. Anyways, Gunther Steiner, the team principal of Haas, says that the fact that they do have two teams on the grid might become a bone of contention as spaces on the grid grow. And this kind of ties in nicely with the story we're just talking about, potentially Andretti entering Formula One if they can sort out a deal or come to an agreement with Formula One management. Anyways, Gunther had to say, quote, "I think right or not right, it needs to be discussed. Obviously, there are a lot of other sports where that is not allowed, but it is now up to there is not an issue with this." And he goes on to say, quote, "because the sport is becoming more and more popular, gaining more and more worth financially. So more and more of these things will come up because everything gets more difficult. So this will be for sure an argument which sooner or later will come up." And then he does finally end up his thoughts by saying, quote, "it's been 18 years now, so it's worked fine up until now. But at some stage, there will be question asks and there will be answers why it works or why it shouldn't work. But it's not worth reacting on this one because it works for a long time," end quote. All right, moving on to the next story here, and this is another one that again I can completely see why Mark threw this into the show. I want a good guy. What a great partner to do the show with. I've been busy with other things. I get home from work this afternoon, get a message from Hammy. Hey, show outline's all ready to go. I'm not going to be here, but here you go. Go and crush it. Have a great show on your own, and I'll be back on Sunday. So again, this is why I can see the excited responses from Mark Hamilton, even though that he's not here. So I'm going to do it in absentia, to try and give my take of what I would expect to see if Mark was sitting across from me right now. But this is another one that he's talked about, or we've talked about quite a bit recently. We all know that Mark jokingly has put up his condo on the fictitious Lance Stroll Island up for sale or thinking about it because, he's been quite a supporter. We both have, to be quite honest, of Lance, but he's certainly struggled a lot this year. Anyways, this is an article from racefans.net, and the title is "Lawrence Stroll says his son has suffered a lot of bad luck during 2023. So he had 9 retirements due to engine failures, according to Lawrence. And I don't know, it's tough, right? As much as Mark and I have kind of speculated and wondered if things truly get horrible with the way that things are going for Lance, we've always thought, well, would Lawrence be brave enough to actually pull the pin? We thought, well, he's become this ultra rich businessman and entrepreneur for all the stuff that he's done throughout his life, all the businesses and all the ventures that he's had, and that if it came to it, there would be very little sentimentality. But I feel like that door's a little bit open. I think we can have that the debate whether or not he would actually pull the plug and toss his own flesh and blood out of the team. I don't know. Anyways, here's the quote from Lawrence saying, quote, "Lance started the year on the back foot with 2 broken wrists for the first half dozen races, which was very challenging, but he did a really heroic job, and he's had an unfortunate amount of bad luck. He's had 9 retirements due to engine failures or a ring wing fail at Suzuka, half of the races, and it hasn't been anything to do with his own abilities. he has had just a lot of bad luck, sadly, end quote. So what do you think? I think that Lance will be back next year. I don't think that that his dad is going to fire him and kick him out of his Formula One team. Anyways, sticking with Lawrence Stroll, this is a story from skysports.com entitled, "We've Always Tried to Win, Stroll's Aston Martin Ambition." Anyways, it goes on to say, and this is an article from Mark Baisley, and really quite interesting, just talking about what Lawrence Stroll is doing and the amount of money that he's put into it. It was £128 million that that Stroll invested in Aston Martin in 2020, and became also the executive chairman of the British luxury sports car manufacturer. And wow, it is a you know, what a name that is, Aston Martin, a truly iconic mark that I think is beloved by many. And not only did he become the executive director of the road car brand, but the team that used to be known as Racing Point, which used to be Force India, formerly, that's a tough word tonight. I'm going to need some caffeine to power through the rest of the show at this rate. That used to be Force India as well. Anyways, we talk a little bit more about that. Stroll told Sky Sports the following quote: "The company started on the racetrack 110 years ago. We won Le Mans in 1959 with our DBR1. We've won 19 times since with our various Vantages and the front engine sports cars. So tremendously excited to be back in the fight at Le Mans. We are definitely going to win, like everything else we do. We've always tried to win," end quote. So it goes on to talk a little bit more. So Racing Point did have one victory at the Sakhir Grand Prix in 2020. That was at Bahrain, because at the track there, they have a couple of different configurations. The configuration that we've become used to watching the Grand Prix there for many, many years. But they do have an outer ring, which I think delivered, what was it, a sub 1 minute lap. It was kind of cool to watch, and that was the one time they did win a race as Racing Point. So when you go on to see what Lawrence Stroll wants to do, what his ambitions are, he's pretty open about it and all the things he wants to do. And one of the things that he goes on to talk about in this interview with Sky Sports, he talks quite a bit about Fernando Alonso and has the following to say, quote, "He's brought a tremendous amount. He's full of energy like he's 22 years old. He's very committed, extremely motivated, and obviously hugely talented and a fantastic ambassador for the brand. He's been as fantastic as a Formula One driver, so I'd say on and off the track, he's been a fantastic ambassador for Aston Martin," end quote. So then they go on to talk about what's going to happen with Fernando, because at this point, you know, he's 42, 43 years old. His current contract expires at the end of 2024, which would be his 21st season competing in Formula One. And you have to remember, he had a bit of a sabbatical, a bit of a hiatus a couple of years ago before coming back. And, you know, it's crazy to think that he's been in Formula One for that, at that long. So, you know, at the end of 2024, he'll be 44 years old. But Lawrence is not ruling anything out, you know, when it comes to giving Fernando another contract after this current deal expires at the end of the next year. And he had the following to say, quote, "Anything is possible. Right now, he has a contract to drive for us next year, and we're really looking forward to that," end quote. And finally, in the article, Stroll goes on just to talk about the team itself and talks a little bit about what they've accomplished and what they need to do to take that next step. But he has the following to say, quote, "We've had 7 podiums in 2023, so we're already podium contenders. Last year's car was developed in our old factory of 33 years. Next year's car will be developed on our new campus, and it's quite a dramatic change to what we've already had. It's really bringing a state-of-the-art facility to the state-of-art facility." Then he goes on to talk about you know, where they are and where the rest of the Formula One paddock is, the other 9 teams that aren't Red Bull. And he starts off talking about the success that Red Bull has had in the last couple of years. He says, quote, "I'm jealous, very jealous. Obviously, they've done a great job and they're enjoying what they've done, so hats off to them. The playing field is leveled by the budget cap, which wasn't the case a few years ago. I think we all just have to do a better job to beat them." And then finally, he closes out the interview just talking about the organization of the team and some of the things that they're doing, you know, such as opening up a wind tunnel at their new headquarters, which they hope to bring online in September 2024. And he really feels that will be a big boost and a big benefit to designing and building new cars in the future. But what he really does, you know, I point out quite nicely, he's talking about that the fact that this whole program, this Aston Martin Formula One program, really comes down to the people that they have in the factory at Silverstone. He has the following to say, quote, "It's a lot of hard work from the guys and gals. We're a team of 750 to 800 people here in Silverstone. So it's really having the right leadership, vision, and plan, and working really hard," end quote. And I think it's probably pretty obvious to state that that their goal is to win races and world championships. And, well, they haven't done that quite yet, but certainly, especially in the first half of this year, it was great to see all the podiums and all the results that they had. So definitely a team to watch for the future. Anyways, time for another quick break. Come back on the flip side. Still plenty of news to talk about and go over before we head into looking at the race this weekend at the Circuit of Americas in Austin, Texas. Always a great race. Always a great turnout by the Formula One fans there in the great state of Texas. We'll talk about that in a moment. So don't go away. We will be right back. All right, welcome back to the show, and the next story is going to be an interesting one to talk about. Again, we stay within the Red Bull orbit. This is another article from motorsportweek.com from Taylor Powling, entitled "Tsunoda Opens Up on Aston Martin Honda F1 Switch Rumors," and this is an interesting one, right? I mean, as long as Sergio Perez struggles, regardless if you know, he's winning races or not, I mean, he's certainly made the headlines quite a few times this year for all the wrong reasons. Anyways, in an interview, Yuki was asked a number of questions. And first of all, he was asked in Qatar last week if he thought that he might be an option for a Red Bull seat should it become available. Obviously, if you know, it'd be Sergio, not Max, leaving. Tsunoda had the following to say, quote, "I hope so, to be honest. Obviously, the main thing is I don't want Red Bull to misunderstand something like, for example, that I'm just focusing now on Aston Martin or anything like that. I'm at AlphaTauri, and I've been at Red Bull since I was 18 years old. So now I am focusing on to perform for Red Bull, not for Aston Martin. Hopefully, they don't have misunderstood those things, and hopefully, they really consider my future seriously. If I perform well as a driver, hopefully they consider me more, and obviously if I didn't understand, but if I'm able to show my performance, I would like to have a bit more kind of a rotation." And then Tsunoda goes on more to talk about perhaps Honda tying up a deal with Aston Martin and whether that you know, could hurt his chance to stay with Red Bull or whatever the case may be, because he's got some you know, he wants to try and get away from the links that he has with Honda, obviously Japanese driver and a Japanese engine manufacturer. You know, there are, you know, some things going on there. It was Yuki, when he was asked about you know, a potential partnership between Aston Martin and Honda, he said, quote, "If that's the case, I'm not happy with it. I don't know how the conversations are going with Honda and Red Bull, because Honda is still supplying the engine. But I think from the Honda side, what they're saying is that as long as I can succeed, as long as a Japanese driver can one day achieve success, they don't care where I go. They want a Japanese driver to be successful. Obviously, I would be lucky if we worked together and achieve success, but in the end, they don't care about it. And that's what it I really like about Honda. They don't care which team you are at, so I don't think they're really focusing on Aston Martin or whatever. They're just focusing as a driver on Yuki Tsunoda and the support to make me a successful driver," end quote. All right, next story, coming back to Red Bull, and this is a story from Motorsport, pardon me, not Motorsport Week, but but speedcafe.com, written by Ian Parks, entitled "Has Confirmed Switch to Red Bull Concepts." And well, you know, why figure it out on your own when you have a team that's been as successful as Red Bull and try and mimic and copy what they're doing? So Gunther Steiner's actually confirmed that Haas has switched to a Red Bull style aerodynamic package or concept after realizing that they could make no more progress or gains. So with the car in the aerodynamic package that they had previously. Gunther Steiner had the following to say, quote, "The upgrade on the VF23 is aerodynamic. We changed the concept of the car because what we started with, because of the new regulations last year, we couldn't make any more gains performance-wise. Creating more downforce and less drag, it just wasn't there anymore, so we needed to change the concept to which is commonly known as the Red Bull concept or the downwash concept. It is a substantial update, and we were able to do this within the cost cap because we didn't have any updates at the beginning of the season because, again, going back, we couldn't find any performance that we could make parts to put on the car." End quote. So Kevin Magnussen and Nico Hülkenberg are the two drivers. They're really hoping that they're going to see some big improvements. And according to Kevin Magnussen, at least that if they get the upgrades, it might help him break out of the funk that he's been stuck in. And the one thing he's really been complaining about is tire drag when he's been substantial or high tire drag when stuck in traffic. So when he was asked about it, Magnussen added to the conversation by saying, quote, "There's actually a second element to bringing this upgrade, which is to research for next year. We're all secretly hoping it performs better than what we currently have, but actually the bigger target with this is the research and learning what we can do for next year's car. It's been clear that in very specific circumstances our car can perform, but it's too narrow a window and we need to broaden it to make it more user-friendly and compliant with a bigger variety of tracks and conditions. Hopefully we'll be able to follow easier and be more friendly to tires," end quote. So there you go. And again, just goes to show that if somebody's doing something right, everybody eventually jumps all over it. Okay, going to jump on over to another story here. This one comes to us from Formula1.com, F1.com, and entitled "James Vowles Admits Williams Counting Down of the Days Until Arrival of Chief Technical Officer Pat Fry." So they have not had a chief technical officer since 2019. That was the post that was held by Patty Lowe, who was before then formerly of Mercedes. He left 4 years ago. They also parted ways with their technical director, FX de Maison, at the end of last year, along with team principal Jost Capito. But in July of this year, they announced that Pat Fry would be joining Williams as chief technical officer from the Alpine team. And he's been there since February 2022. And he's going to be starting with Williams on November 1st. James Vowles was asked about, if they were counting down to, the number of days until Pat Fry joins the team, and Vowles responded, quote, "Definitely counting down the days as much as I've tried my best. I need someone who's far better than me in that role. We've brought together a really good group of individuals at Williams, and we are working together. In part, I have sadness because I have to start letting go of that side of things. With 2024, though, the die is pretty much set in that direction of travel. The chassis will be already by the time he comes through the door, be the most of the way produced. It has to be. That's what the timelines are for these things, which means you have to define some of the big elements to these things. The aero package, again, will be most of the way through development, even though it's going to be for next year. But the impact, as I've said all along, I'm not interested in the short term. I'm interested in the long term. So he will already in the 2024 season have a positive effect, but that real effect will kick in 25, 26, and in 2027. End quote. So Vowles has not been to Williams all that long. He was brought in last winter after Jost Capito was let go. When he was asked in an interview about his own journey as the team principal of Williams since the beginning of this year, he replied, quote, "You don't realize until questions like this come up where you think it's nearly a year. Good, I would say. It's a role, obviously, I had a lot to learn and I still have a lot to learn, and I would be disappointed if you asked me a question and I say I haven't learned something new this week. week, but I think it doesn't take much looking from the outside to realize we are in a good direction of travel. The team has very much embraced me. I feel at home there. I felt at home there just after a few months, which is, to name the extraordinary, to go to a completely new environment after 20 years elsewhere, but yet it feels like home is a strong indication of how Williams is as an organization. What I'm more excited by as I keep going into the long term, but it's not the last 9 months, I'm really excited by a couple of years from now when it properly kicks into gear, end quote. So there you go. Another interesting little tidbit here. This is going to be one for the NFL fans, which, you know, I count myself as. And this is a story from sportsbusinessjournal.com and from the finance section entitled Mahomes, Kelce Invest in Alpine F1 Team with Autro. And so there you go. Pat Mahomes, Travis Kelce have invested some of their big NFL bucks into Alpine F1. I'll just read a couple of lines out of this one here. Autro Capital, part of the consortium that bought a quarter of the BWT Alpine F1 team this summer, has brought on board several A-list stars to be part of their ownership group, including Kansas City Chiefs quarterback Patrick Mahomes and tight end Travis Kelce. The new investors are involved will be announced officially later this morning and follows the $218 million 24% investment into Alpine by Autro, Jerry Cardinal's Redbird Capital, partners and actors Ryan Reynolds and Rob McElhenney in June. That agreement valued the French car manufacturer's F1 team at $900 million. On top of the Chiefs players, other investors joining the group will be PGA Tour player Rory McIlroy, British boxer Anthony Joshua, English soccer player Trent Alexander-Arnold, Spanish soccer player Juan Mata. Another investor unveiled today is Roger Ehrenberg, the business executive who also owns stakes in the Marlins, Real Salt Lake, and Leeds United. Autro says that the athletes will drive awareness to the team and help its efforts to improve the team in areas like media, sponsorship, licensing, and hospitality. Current sponsors include the title sponsor, Austrian Water Company, BWT, plus Binance, Microsoft, Xbox, Castrol, Qatar Airways, Kappa, and Sprinklr. So there you go. Pat Mahomes and Travis Kelce getting into the Formula One game. As we head into the end of the show here, before we do that, do have a bit of a race preview, but Lando Norris and Oscar Piastri feel that the 79-point gap to Ferrari and the Constructors' Championship is doable. Seems like a big ask. Anyways, when it's you know, when they're asked about it, it's quite interesting, right? I don't know. 79 points seems very, very difficult to overcome, but I loved the attitude. Lando Norris said in an interview with Formula1.com, quote, "It's doable. I think so. A couple of races ago, it was 70-something points to Aston. I think we're doing a good job, not just in terms of pace, but we've had a 1.8-second pit stop, which is pretty impressive from the guys. They've been working extremely hard, so to reward the whole team consistently is only more motivating and a bigger boost every weekend. They like the taste of success. It's the first time they're getting it consistently, and I think that only makes them want it more and more and more every weekend that we're doing. So these guys are doing a great job. I think as drivers, we're both doing a decent job too, so we'll keep it up," end quote. So anyways, I don't know, 79 points with a handful of races to go seems like a big task, but you never know. Anyways, as we get into the race itself, you know, there's nothing to play for in terms of the championships. Obviously, there are some of these interesting little threads. You know, when it comes to drivers, you know, will Perez kind of clean up his act? Will Aston Martin be overtaken by McLaren and the constructors? Will McLaren not only just pass them but overtake Ferrari by the end of the year? Those are some kind of fun things, and you know, not what we all signed up for, not what we all hoped for when we sat down to watch this season unfold, and it became another dominant season by Red Bull, and they just seem to be beating everybody, and it seems as though that nobody can catch them at the moment. But there's still some fun things going out there to watch in the constructors and other drivers in the drivers' championship. Some of these things at the end of the year, so there is something definitely worth worth checking out. Anyway, Circuit of the Americas. I love this track. You know, it's just outside of Austin, Texas. It is It's pretty cool. I mean, it's been around now. Let me see, the Circuit of the Americas. I should just pull this up here. So it's been around since it was opened on October 21st, 2012. There you go. So 10 years ago, another Hermann Tilke and project. So that's a lot of the modern Formula One tracks have been designed by Tilke and his company. So, but this is not the first time that we've had a race in the USA. There's been 51 previous Grand Prix going back as early as 1908 when it comes to winning as drivers at the US Grand Prix. And obviously it's been a quota for quite some time. It's been other places at different times. It was Lewis Hamilton has 6 wins at the U.S. Grand Prix, the first time in 2007, most recently in 2017. So Lewis definitely overdue for a win in the USA. I mean, that's been a long, long time. Michael Schumacher, the legendary German drivers, had 5 wins. And then drivers with 3 wins include Graham Hill and Jim Clark, who dominated the U.S. Grand Prix, winning 3 races a pair from the years 1962 to 1967. And Ferrari is the most winningest constructor, having won 10 races at the U.S. Grand Prix, first time in 1975, most recently in 2018 when it was won by Kimi Raikkonen. And Lotus and McLaren have 8 wins each. McLaren won there most recently in 2012. Mercedes have 6 wins, first time in 1910. Before that was an officially sanctioned predates Formula One. Anyways, they won 5 races between 2014 and 2019. Some other notable teams that have won 3 races include Fiat, BRM, Red Bull, and then a couple of teams that have a pair of wins each are Peugeot, who won the U.S. Grand Prix way back in 1915 and 16, and Tyrrell, who won in 1971 and 72. Anyways, this is a track that I like a lot. You know, it's very tight and compact compared to some of the other tracks that we've seen. I mean, they raced at Watkins Glen from 61 to 70. When just mentioned that Jim Clark and Graham Hill won 6 races between the two of them. Then we've seen Phoenix in the late 80s, early 90s, and then we had about half dozen of races or so at Indianapolis, which had part of the oval, and then this sort of makeshift kind of infield track that they had there, and that was from 2000 to 2007, had a bit of a hiatus until they got to Dakota in 2012. But it's a cool track. There's a lot going on there. You go from start finish, you kind of have this Superman effect where they go very fast and furious out of the start finish and swoop up to the first corner, which is 120 degree left hander. It's an 85 kilometer an hour corner, which is taken in second gear. Then you go into this turn 2, which is a right hander, 235 kilometers an hour, just a little ways from turn 1. Then you go into these series of corners, turns 3 to 6, and it's very cool because they hit turn 3 at 275k seventh gear, and as they go back through these series of left and right handers, by the time they get out of that complex of corners at turn 3, they've shed about 45k, about what would that be, about 20 something miles per hour. Go into it at 275 at seventh gear. They come out of it at 230 in sixth gear. And then you go through another couple of tight, twisty corners. And then they bring it down to another very sharp left-hander, another 120 degree corner at turn 11. They take that in second gear down another straightaway, which is another speed trap, into another very sharp left-hander again at turn 12. And then they wrap it around a couple more times and eventually bring it out at turn 20, which is a second gear corner taken at 95 kilometers an hour. There's 11 corners to the left, 9 to the right, and certainly a very exciting track. I enjoy watching races there. Some of the stats that we have for the track itself, pardon me, is 5.1... pardon me, I'll get this right. Third time around, 5.513 kilometers or 3.426 miles. Race length is 308.45 kilometers or 191.634 miles. 56 laps. Last year, we had Carlos Sainz from Ferrari on pole. The podium was Max Verstappen winning. Lewis Hamilton was second. Charles Leclerc was third. The fastest lap was set last year at a 138.788 by George Russell. And just looking at Pirelli's information here, they are going to bring their C2, C3, and C4 tires, C2 being the hardest compound, C4 being the softest. So about the mid-range of their tires. Again, 56 laps. The track records, or the lap record there, is 136.169, and that was set by Charles Leclerc way back in 2019. So what are we going to see this weekend? Again, like I say, nothing is really there to play for the big prizes. Other things going on in the Drivers' Championship. Can Lewis Hamilton catch and surpass Sergio Perez before the end of the year? Can McLaren pass Aston Martin? Can they do that and then also catch up to and pass Ferrari? All waits to be seen. But with only a handful of races left, anything there's still some things up to for grabs. But Max just keeps winning. Sergio still seems to be stumbling around, so take your pick. It could be Max, probably most likely will be Max, but he doesn't really have to race for anything anymore. But I don't think Max has any other setting than go out there and drive fast. And when Max drives fast, he usually wins races, and I expect him to do the same this weekend, notwithstanding. Anyways, I'm getting tired now. It's been a lot of talking without a break this evening. I'm going to wrap it up there. Thank you all for listening to the show tonight. Thank you for bearing with me on my own. Thank you for bearing with Mark Hamilton, mostly on his own, over the last couple of weeks during my absence. And again, a big shout out to him and the guests that have come in onto the show during my time away. But glad to be back. Glad to do the show. Looking forward to seeing Mark again on Saturday night, talking about the U.S. Grand Prix at COTA. Oh, one final thing I should have mentioned. I did have the weather forecast, as you would expect. Should be nice weather in Texas, looking Saturday afternoon for qualifying. 34 degrees Celsius as a high, 19 degrees Celsius as a low overnight, which translates to 94 degrees Fahrenheit as a high, 66 degrees Fahrenheit for a low. Sunday, again, it's going to be sunny, 32 degrees Celsius as a high, 19 degrees Celsius as a low, which translates to about 89 Fahrenheit of a high and a low of 66 degrees for a low overnight as well. So it looks like we should have a good race there. We have seen some torrential rain there in the past, but looks like it should be a nice day to go racing at the Circuit of Americas in Austin, Texas. Jealous of all of those of you who listen to the show that are going there this weekend. And certainly we will be living vicariously through you, but still sitting at home in the comfort of our own homes watching the race. But yeah, still not the same as being there. Anyways, if you want to get in touch, send us an email, scooteryf1pod@gmail.com, or tweet us on Twitter. Not sure what we're going to do with our socials, but Mark and I have been discussing some things, so stay tuned for that. Anyways, you can tweet at us for now at scooteryf1pod, and that's it, guys. Thank you for joining in. We'll talk to you again on Sunday night. Enjoy the weekend, enjoy the race, and we'll talk to you again soon. Bye for now.